Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. In less than 2 weeks, the Utah Republican and Democratic parties will hold neighborhood caucus meetings across the state. Their delegates will be chosen for this year's county and state conventions, and those delegates have a lot of power, choosing the party's nominees to go on the ballot in the November election. We'll talk about the process with Utah Republican Party Executive Director Ivan Dubois and Democratic Party Chair Jim DeBacchus. Then, hoping to thwart undercover investigations by animal rights activists, state lawmakers are poised to approve a bill that would ban the photographing of livestock on private property. We'll hear arguments on the bill from the Utah Farm Bureau Federation and the Humane Society. Join us for Politics Up Close, coming up right after the news, here on NPR Utah, KCBW. Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Although November is still several months away, many would tell you that Utah's elections will actually be decided this month. That's because in less than 2 weeks, Republicans and Democrats will attend neighborhood caucus meetings in the hopes of becoming delegates to the county and state conventions. Those delegates, by and large, are the ones who choose which candidates will represent each party come the general election. But in the past, some caucus meetings have been plagued by low turnout. What's being done to get more people out to the caucuses, and what do you need to know if you want to participate? I'm joined in the studio now by Ivan Dubois. He's executive director of the Utah Republican Party. Ivan, it's good to have you on the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And also with us is Jim DeBacchus, chair of the Utah Democratic Party. And Jim, it's good to have you back as well.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments. Do you plan to participate in this month's caucuses? Will you go to the GOP meetings or the Democratic ones? Our number is 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. So, Jim, exactly what happens at a caucus meeting? Start out with the basics.
Well, you go on to the site, UtahDemocrats.org, and find out where to go in your neighborhood. And you show up at 7 o'clock on Tuesday the 13th of March. And you go in and meet with your neighbors, and you make some political decisions. Mm-hmm. It's very neighborly. It's very friendly. It's very nice. It's very easy.
And so do your neighbors vote on who gets to be the delegate? How does that work?
Yeah, there's a vote. There's a registration process. And the Democrats, being open and being welcoming and wanting everybody to participate, we don't have to swear allegiance of loyalty the way the Republicans do. So everyone is welcome. We'd love to have you. If you go to the Republicans, you better be prepared to swear that you're a Republican. But that's not so with our caucuses.
Only 2 minutes in, Jim, and you're already standing on your platform. But of course, that's what this show is about. 801-355-8255 is the number to join us at. Ivan, how can people find out more information about your Republican meetings?
It's really simple. Go to www.utgop.org. You can type in your address, your birth date, some kind of unique identifier. We'll be able to look you up on the website and tell you exactly where your caucus location is. And I would counter what the good chairman said and dial it down a little bit and say, we're not looking for a blood oath. All we're asking you to do is ask for a little bit of loyalty. If you're coming to the Republican caucus because you want to support a Republican candidate, we just want you to update your voter registration form and say, you know, I have a little bit of loyalty to this organization. It's not a blood oath.
It's not a blood oath.
We don't want your firstborn.
I apologize for that.
but I think it's fair as a political party to ask for a little bit of loyalty from the people who are have this responsibility to select the Republican nominee. I don't think it's asking too much to them to say, why don't you become a Republican before you do that?
And so, Ivan, you know, sometimes these caucuses have been held in individual precincts and people's homes. Sometimes they're held at mass meetings, several precincts all at once. How is the GOP doing it this year?
It's going to be mostly done in public locations in kind of a mass meeting format. I'm proud of the work the Republican Party has done the last couple of years. We've taken all of the criticism about the caucus system and we've tried to address each of those issues. And one of the criticisms that we've received over the last couple of years is the amount of people and the logistics of the night of the event. And we put a lot of work and a lot of effort into making sure those locations run really smooth, that everybody will have plenty of parking, that you can get from your car into your caucus location, which most of the time is going to be inside a school, inside a classroom. You can get through that registration process pretty quickly and pretty simply.
And Jim, is it the same way with the Democrats, these mass meetings? Is that how you're doing it this year?
That's exactly. We're doing it the same way. And I want to compliment, actually, Thomas Wright, who is the chair of the Republican Party, and Ivan as well. They have made a commitment toward the caucuses this year that I think is unparalleled in the history of the state. I mean, they're going to have television campaigns. I was driving around in Provo going door to door, looking for anybody to run for the Senate down there. And I saw there were signs down there, lawn signs, saying this is the place where the Republicans are going to. I mean, the Republicans really deserve a great deal of credit. They have full-time organizers. They've really made it. And, you're waiting for something bad to happen here, but it's not going to happen. I mean, I give you a great deal of credit. And most of the time when Thomas has talked about these caucuses, he has said, ours is Thursday. The Democrats are Tuesday. I appreciate the commitment that they've made to the caucuses this round.
He's not giving people the wrong date for the Democratic meetings.
No, I might do that. Thomas would never do that.
Thank you.
Jim, what do you think of this recent push by the LDS Church to get its members to participate more actively in the caucus meetings?
I think it's clear that the LDS Church was saying, go to the Democratic caucus. And it was a breakthrough. The first time the letter from the First Presidency said, go to your caucus. It's Tuesday night, which is only we're having the caucus Tuesday night. So it became quite clear. It was read out in church meetings. And there it was, go to the Democratic caucus on Tuesday night. And I'm very pleased that the church has made that kind of a statement. And we're, of course, always very pleased to have LDS people join our big tent. You don't have to swear an oath, Democratic Party.
I think more accurately, the statement said something along the lines of there are principles of the church in both parties' platforms, right?
Yeah, I think you got a different letter than I than
Oh,
I saw.
Yeah. Well, it did say, in full disclosure, it did say go to the Republican one on Thursday, but it pointed out go to the Tuesday night one as well. So
Ivan, does the Utah GOP welcome this this push, I guess, by the church to get more involvement?
Yeah, absolutely. We welcome the push by any group or any individual. It's great to have it come from the LDS Church. There are a number of other political and religious and civic organizations that have made similar efforts this year to get people to their caucus night. And that is our biggest message is we want people to come and participate. We're putting our money and our resources where our mouth is to say, not only are we saying we want you to come, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for you to come. We've put a lot of resources into training our precinct leaders so that we can have productive, respectful meetings. And so that everyone will come and walk away with a good experience and realize the value and the benefits of the caucus system.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guests are Jim DeBacchus, chairman of the Utah Democratic Party, along with Ivan Dubois. He's executive director of the Utah Republican Party. We welcome your questions and comments this morning at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Ivan, remind us a bit about the responsibilities these delegates have. What exactly do they do when convention season starts? Later on in the spring?
That's a great question. It is one of the most unique and exciting positions in politics. A delegate is elected at their neighborhood caucus by their friends and neighbors, and they will either serve at the state convention or the county convention, where they have the primary responsibility of selecting who the Republican nominees will be for the general election in November.
And so if I'm a Republican delegate, can I expect Orrin Hatch to take me out to a fancy dinner as he tries to go for votes at the state GOP convention? How does that what happens in the months between?
Well, I don't know about any fancy dinners, but but certainly you can expect to hear from all of the candidates running for all of the office, and they'll make a concerted effort to reach out to you as an individual and want to connect with you individually. And then it's the job of the delegate to represent their precinct and the values and the desires that their precinct shares and be the representative from their neighborhood to these conventions and select the candidates that are best for their neighborhoods. There's not another state in the system, there's not another state in the union or another nomination process in the system that gives voters the kind of accountability and the kind of personal relationships with elected officials like the caucus and convention system does.
And Jim, it works pretty much the same over there in the Democratic Party?
Well, being bipartisan the way I am, if I could comment on the Republican process, the process last time certainly has been leading up to this was completely hijacked by the extremists. And they threw Senator Bennett out because he was too liberal. And so those delegates that those few delegates that showed up didn't represent, I don't even think they represented the Republican Party. They certainly didn't represent the independents or the people of the state. And so one of the, and this is just me guessing, one of the reasons for this tremendous emphasis by the Republican Party this time on getting delegates out is to try to dilute the power of the extremists who have completely lock, stock, and barrel taken over the Republican Party.
Well,
he's dead wrong. He's dead wrong.
Why is he dead wrong?
You know, the basic fundamental core of the United States government is when people are involved, the government functions better. And I know Chairman DeBacus would agree with me on that. It's not about who's taking over or who's hijacked or who's in control. It's what we're trying to do is saying every Utah in the state needs to be active in their government. And we're trying to make that possible for them to do. We know that with this caucus convention system that we have, that if you come to your caucus night, you learn, start to talk with your neighbors, find out who's politically active. You start to talk about the issues as a neighborhood. You are absolutely going to vote that general election, and chances are you're going to take two or three people with you. So we want to get people to caucus night to keep them in the system the entire election cycle. It has nothing to do with who's in control or who's not in control.
Well, Jim, just to play devil's advocate here, you know, observers in 2010 would note that Jim Matheson was forced into a primary when Claudia Wright got 45% of the vote at the convention, and then in the primary election, Matheson got like 80% of the vote in that district. So wouldn't that also indicate that there's a disbalance, a disproportionate amount of perhaps more liberal Democratic delegates?
The system was working perfectly correct. The problem with Senator Bennett is, as he said recently, he was excommunicated from the Republican Party, and he used that word, because the 1% of the state's population showed up, and the motivated extremists are the ones that showed up. If Bob Bennett would have won in a primary, all the polls showed that, and he probably would have won the Senate race. But this goes back to the point of why you ought to go to these caucuses. It is important that the voice of the people be heard and not the voice of extremists.
But just to clarify, though, the Democratic system is exactly the same. So, you know, your criticisms of the GOP could very well happen.
Well, except point out to me, Jeff. I mean, I can give you a list of 20 extremist legislators and Republicans, but is Pat Jones an extremist? Is Ben McAdams, Ross Romero? I mean, our system in the Democratic side, we just don't seem to produce those kind of extremists that the Republicans just pop out like dumplings.
Ivan, we'll give you the final word on this before we take a call. What's your response?
My response is very simple. Just come to your caucus meeting if you don't like the direction things are headed. I happen to think a lot of people in the state do like the direction the state is headed, and they're proud of the representation that the Republican Party has given them over the years. And if you're not happy with it, then like Chairman DeBacus said, Tuesday, March 13, go to your Democrat caucus. You can elect a very moderate Democrat who will be able to hold a seat in the state Senate or state House.
We agree.
I would prefer that you come to the if your values align with the Republican Party. If you see some core fundamental beliefs that you share with the Republican Party platform, come to the Republican caucuses on March 15th and elect a representative who will be able to make some changes.
All right, let's go to the phones here, and we have Olea calling from Riverton. What's your question or comment for Jim DeBacus and Ivan Dubois?
Yes, I've been very interested in the conversation you had this morning. I was actually there when the letter from the First Presidency of the LDS Church was read. Mm-hmm. And my main question is, as a Republican, and I am a staunch Republican, I'm a supporter of Romney, but I'm very interested in knowing the different perspectives. And I've seen, like, for example, we just saw the robo call and the Democrats who went out and voted against Romney for Santorum. But I also know that I have some very close friends who are Democrats who have very high values. And I was wondering if I would be welcome at a Democratic caucus where I might be able to just get a different perspective, an honest perspective from both sides to me, able to make a more wise judgment in my decisions in the upcoming year.
So do you mean you want to become a delegate, or you just want to go to take part in the discussion?
I just want want to go to take part of a discussion, and mainly, more than taking part of a discussion, I would like to listen to the discussion. I don't necessarily need to take part, but I love to listen. I participated in, you know, watching all of the debates. For us, it's like Sunday night football. You know what? My family gets together, and we discuss the issues as we're listening, and so I'm very open to understanding perspectives, because there is a lot of animosity between the parties, and I feel badly for this. George Washington told us if we became a bipartisan country that we would fall, and I see a great division among the parties rather than a rallying around and trying to say, hey, you know, what can we do to make this country work and move forward?
So, Olea, are you a registered Republican or unregistered?
I am a registered Republican.
All right, so Jim, that question is to you then. Can registered Republicans at least come to watch, if not become a delegate?
Not only can you come to watch, unlike some other parties, you can participate, you can be involved. We love to have you. And as a matter of fact, in Riverton, you can run for the Senate on the Democratic side. And I'm inviting you to go to your caucus meeting on the 13th.
But okay. But if you're a registered Republican, you can't become a Democratic delegate. Let's make that clear, right?
We would change that. We could change that just like that.
All right.
We're not picky. We're not rigidly ideological. We welcome everybody. We got such a big tent. We love everybody, especially now LDS people. Come on aboard our big Democratic tent.
All right, we need to take a break here. We're speaking with Jim DeBacchus, chairman of the Utah Democratic Party, and Ivan Dubois, who's executive director of the Utah Republican Party. This is Politics Up Close, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. We're talking with Utah Democratic Party Chairman Jim DeBacchus and Utah Republican Party Executive Director Ivan Dubois about the caucus meetings coming up later this month. So, Ivan, Jim was talking about efforts to, you know, promote the caucuses. Tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing to increase turnout this year.
Sure. Very good. Well, the Republican Party has a goal to have 100,000 people at our caucus meetings on Thursday, March 15th. And that's an increase up from 58,000 in 2010. And that's a goal that we've established going precinct by precinct across the state and asking each precinct leader to find more people to come to their meeting. To help people get there, then we will have television ads, radio ads, billboards. There's 20,000 yard signs going to go up across the state over the next couple of days that will tell you exactly where your neighborhood precinct will be. There's 300,000 door hangers that will go on people's doors a couple of days before caucus that tell them right where they need to be. Numerous other ways to help people understand this process and invite them to participate. And I do want to say that the Republican Party has gone out of its way to bring people into the caucus night. We want people to show up. We want people who can identify with the Republican Party platform. We want them to come to our caucus.
And Jim, what have the efforts been like on the Democratic side?
Well, they got hundreds of thousands of dollars over in that 1% party. We have less than $8 in our budget for promoting the caucuses.
Right, I'll buy you lunch if that's what you're asking.
Right. So we depend on KCPW and the rest of the media and the fallout from all the money that the Republicans are spending. But our goal is not 100,000. Our goal is 1,847,312 people out to our caucuses. And if they all show up, we're going to be in trouble building-wise. But we really would like and welcome everybody in the state to our caucuses.
So, Jim, last week I had a guest on from the AARP talking about how their group is trying to get more senior citizens to show up to caucus meetings, saying they're underrepresented. Are there any specific groups that your party's been pushing to see higher turnout from this year?
The people over 60, the golden people, and I'll be there in two more years, make up 40% of the voters. Even though they make up a relatively small percentage, they are incredibly valuable and I think sought after. And so we really aren't targeting any specific groups or people. We really want everybody, and we've gone out of our way to kind of make sure that everybody feels welcome in our big Democratic tent. We don't want anybody to feel uncomfortable or unwelcome because they're too conservative or too liberal or or anything else.
And Ivan, any particular groups you've been pushing to get out to the meetings?
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, I'm proud of the way we have responded to some of the criticisms to the caucus system over the last couple of years. And one of the biggest complaints that people have registered is there's not enough women involved as delegates in the Republican Party. And we've made a significant outreach to numerous groups, women groups, to encourage them to go to their caucus meeting, but not only go to their caucus, but to run as a delegate and be elected as a delegate. We've also put a lot of resources towards bringing in young people, and you'll see some aggressive social media ads over the next couple of weeks trying to bring in younger folks, into people under 30, into the Republican Party.
So I've been switching topics a little bit here. Some people might be interested to know if there's a way they can go to the Republican National Convention. Have you already chosen those delegates yet, or is there still a chance for people to potentially put their name in the ring?
Yeah, there's absolutely a chance. The filing deadline is March 22nd, and you do have to file with the Utah Republican Party. If you visit utgop.org, there's a button there for National Convention. Those national delegates are elected by the state delegates at the state convention on April 21st.
And does it work the same way over with the Democrats, Jim?
Exactly the same way. We will have an election at our convention, and those people will be marching off to North Carolina.
You're listening to Politics Up Close here on KCBW. We still have a few minutes left with Jim DeBacchus of the Utah Democratic Party and Ivan Dubois with the Utah Republicans. The number is 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255 to join us on the air. So, Ivan, as you know, there's been a concerted effort recently by former Governor Michael Leavitt and Kirk Jowers of the Hinckley Institute of Politics to scrap the caucus system based on the argument that it produces candidates who are too extreme to either side. Well, Jim was making this point earlier. Do you think that recent elections have proven that the system works? And if it does work, does it need any tweaking, perhaps?
Well, by recent elections, do you mean elections where Mike Leavitt was elected as governor?
2010, 2008.
Okay. So if you look at the collective history of the Republican Party and the caucus system, I think that it shows that very moderate candidates and very mainstream candidates can be elected. In 2008, you mentioned John Huntsman was hands down the nominee from the
right.
Republican Party. I would call him anything but he's certainly not a right-wing candidate. You know, the focus over the last couple of years has been on the Senator Bennett race. If you'll recall, 2 years ago, on Sunday night, President Obama signed Obamacare into law, shoved it right down our throats. 2 days later, we held our Republican caucuses. People have never been more angry and more upset with the federal government than they were in 2010 on their caucus night. Senator Bennett happened to be right in the middle of that. I don't think that's a reason to scrap the system. That said, I think there are some very legitimate concerns about the system and the way that we do it. And as I've mentioned a couple of times, we've taken all of those criticisms and we've really tried to address them. I don't think it's time to switch to a state where we move into super PACs, where super PACs can come in and run our elections. You look at what's happened in the presidential primary across the state, and all of the money that has just been put onto TV and radio from all these super PACs that have no accountability, aren't responsible to anyone, and they can say anything they want. I don't think that's the kind of system we want in Utah.
Are you disgusted with Mitt Romney's? Because he's been the biggest spender on those super PACs. I mean, he went viciously after Newt Gingrich, and then he went after Rick Santorum. Are you prepared to say, Governor Romney, stop that?
I'm prepared to say that to every presidential candidate, including Barack Obama, including Mitt Romney, including Newt Gingrich.
Okay. Actually, I agree with you.
It's absolutely disgusting.
It's a terrible thing. But
I've been following up on that question. You know, with regards to tweaking the convention system, you know, there's a 60% threshold. And at convention, you get 60% of delegates' votes. That means you don't go to a primary election. What about, you know, raising that to 80%? So perhaps in some cases, there's still no primary, but in other cases, you know, perhaps there will be more primary elections. Is that a conversation that's already been had or will be had in the future, do you think?
Sure. I think it's always an option. We're always looking at ways to improve the system. There has been, I should note, there's been no proposal from anyone within the party to make that change. Huh. So I invite people who want to make that argument to come to your caucus, get elected as a precinct leader, as a precinct chairman, or as a delegate, and come in and make that change. Don't stand on the sidelines and criticize the system. Get inside and try and fix it from the inside. My invitation.
We want to take one more call here from Megan calling from Sandy. What's your question or comment, Megan?
Hi. My criticism is that for the past couple of years, Orrin Hatch and some other Republican delegates have been recruiting their candidates own delegates to go to each and every precinct meeting and have already pre-chosen the delegates. So why should I attend the Republican caucus when those delegates have already been chosen?
Interesting question, Megan.
I would simply say that just because they've been asked to run as a delegate doesn't mean they're elected as the delegate. That's exactly why you need to go and show up, and you need to take all of your friends and neighbors with you, is so that you guys can make the decision as a group. And if you decide that you want to elect someone who's clearly for a candidate, that's your decision. However, you can elect anyone you want. So I'd really encourage you to go. I think that's a great question and a great example of why you actually do need to show up.
And Megan, we appreciate your call. We still have time for another caller if you want to get us at 801-355-8255. Jim, coming back to you, have there been proposals in the Democratic Party to tweak your caucus system? Right now you have the same threshold, that 60% pretty much works the same way as the GOP. Has there been a conversation in your party to make changes?
You know, when Utah became a state, 1896, it accepted the caucus system. That's how every state did things then. And slowly, states moved away from the caucus system. They became more and more dinosaur-like. In the 40s, we actually went away from the caucus system for a couple of years. And there was a result that a governor didn't like. We went back to it. It may be time, at least within the Democratic Party, and this is a decision that the parties can make. This, I suppose the legislature could, but any party can make that choice to move to a full primaries or to make adjustments in the caucus system. It is a bit old-fashioned and cumbersome, and it's certainly worth a discussion about why the other 49 states do it in a way that's different than Utah.
801-355-8255. This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. And Jim, turning to the presidential election for the last couple minutes here, how bad is it going to be for Utah Democrats if Mitt Romney is the nominee?
Well, trying to think of a political answer. the truth is that Utahns have a long history of splitting the ballot, and we will remind them that you can vote for Peter Cook for governor and vote for Mitt Romney, and you can look through and pick and select, and we would hope that every Utahn would keep with that strong Utah tradition of splitting the ballot, even if Mitt Romney is on the top. And I mean, my car is covered with Rick Santorum bumper stickers at the moment, but we'll see how all that works out.
On the flip side of that, Ivan, is it going to be pretty bad for Republicans if Rick Santorum is a nominee here in Utah?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're well on our way. I think Governor Romney had some big victories earlier this week, and I think he'll have even more on Tuesday. And I look forward to him being the nominee, and I look forward to Chairman DeBacus making that argument to a lot of people.
All right, we do have one more caller here. Royce calling from Salt Lake. What's your question or comment?
My question was, I've never been to a caucus before. I'm curious, if you want to be a delegate, what would be the typical amount of people you would need to bring to be relatively confident you could win?
That's a good question. So how many people should you bring with you if you want to, make your case and get the vote there in your precinct? Jim?
If you go to Garfield County, pretty much you'd be at. It really depends on what neighborhood you're in. There are Democratic strongholds, and there are a few places, believe it or not, where we're not really a stronghold in the state. So I think the best thing to do is just pick up the phone and call 5 or 10 of your neighbors and invite them and kind of drag them along, and you're much more likely to get elected as a delegate.
Yeah, I would ditto that. It really depends on where you live. If you're running on the Republican side and you live in South Jordan, you're going to need a good part of your neighborhood to go with you. However, if you're in Salt Lake City, I think you'll just need a handful of folks. But either way, we look forward to everyone coming to their caucus night on March 15th and the Republican caucus on March 15th. You can visit utgop.org to find your location. There's a couple of informative videos that will show you exactly what goes on at a caucus meeting and answer some of those questions for you.
And Jim, the Democrats website and caucus date, what's that?
It's utahdemocrats.org. You can go there and click on all the stuff about caucuses. And we actually have very good donuts and food. I don't think the Republicans do, but I'm not saying they don't, but I'm just saying that's rumors we've heard.
All right, and yours are on Tuesday, March 13th. All right, we've been speaking with Jim Dubakis, chairman of the Utah Democratic Party. Jim, thanks for your time.
My pleasure, as always, Jeff.
And Ivan Dubois, who is the executive director of the Utah Republican Party. Ivan, good to have you.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Politics Up Close. We'll be right back. You're listening to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. House Bill 187 in the Utah legislature has been dubbed by its critics as the Ag Gag Bill. The legislation would make it illegal to record an agricultural operation like livestock while on the owner's property unless you have consent. The measure is aimed at thwarting undercover investigations by animal rights activists, which supporters of the bill say can be misleading and easily taken out of context. The legislation has passed out of the Utah House of Representatives and now awaits a vote on the Senate floor, and has attracted so much attention that actress Katherine Heigl has written to lawmakers urging them to vote it down. Joining me in the studio now to discuss their points of view on this legislation are Randy Parker, who's CEO of the Utah Farm Bureau Federation. Randy, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
And we're also glad to have Carl Arkey, who is with the Humane Society of Utah. Carl, it's good to have you here as well.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Jeff.
Listeners, join us with your questions and comments on this bill. We're at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Randy, it's interesting to see that, this law is being debated here in Utah after it was just passed in Iowa. Why do agricultural operations feel that this policy is necessary right now?
Well, I think the crux of this is that it's important to recognize that farmers and ranchers have the same rights, constitutional rights to private property and to privacy as any other citizen in the country. And it's disheartening to think of people falsifying their job applications for the just out of the looking for the opportunity to gotcha, so they can go on and use that in an opportunity to discredit animal agriculture.
And so I guess an argument some would make is that if you aren't mistreating your livestock at all, then there's nothing to worry about from those investigations. How would you respond to that?
Well, absolutely. And if you look at we don't see a lot of that in the state of Utah. I think what the veterinarian representative John Mathis is trying to do is say, we trust the folks out there that they're implementing ethical and accepted animal husbandry practices that are underwritten by professionals, veterinarians and animal scientists.
And so have we seen such sting operations here in Utah, Randy? I'm curious. Certainly they've happened around the country, but have they happened in this state?
I don't recall any here in this state. But, as you're evaluating these gotchas, these sting operations or whatever that are done covertly, as I look at the groups, and I have a great appreciation for my friend Carl here and what they do for the Humane Society of Utah, but when you look at the national organizations like PETA and HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, their agenda is very different than what our local Humane Society is. They have a political agenda, and we don't know what lengths they will go to. As an example, when they roll out these occasional problems, and we recognize they're bad actors, and we don't condone in any way any mistreatment of animals. Let me assure you of that, Jeff. Mm-hmm. But when those come out, we don't know if that's one in 10,000 that are out there in animal operations. We don't see them rolling out film that says, you know what? These guys in Iowa, this farm here, they're doing it the right way. Let's praise them. That's not what they're about. They've got the gotcha footage, and it's about an anti-animal agriculture agenda.
This is Politics Up Close here on KCBW. We're speaking with Randy Parker of the Utah Farm Bureau Federation and Carl Arkey with the Humane Society of Utah. And Carl, as Randy noted, you know, the Humane Society, obviously a very different organization from PETA.
I appreciate Randy making that distinction. Yeah.
You don't engage in undercover sting operations.
But nor do we recommend it.
But you have officially come out against this legislation. Tell us a little bit more about your position on this.
Well, I think the concern that we have is that it will have a chilling effect on any kind of reporting, and I agree with Randy. We don't know how many times it happens. We do know it has happened in Utah down through the years. We've got a cruelty investigator who's been doing this for 40 years, and he's got a ream of cases that go back 30, 40 years. And so does it happen all the time? No, it doesn't happen all the time. But there's enough cases that make you see that there's the possibility of it happening. And I think we would feel as though we'd be naive to think that the possibility doesn't exist down the road in the future. So I guess our concern is, does it have a chilling effect on somebody reporting those violations? And it could be somebody who's actually working there and working there under is an employee of the ranch or the farm, isn't there for gotcha purposes, but due to his social conscience or her social conscience, sees something that they feel as though they need to report. Now, if they report that, does that become a crime? Do they become a criminal reporting what they believe to be criminal activity? And I guess we're concerned about the broad net. And as we look at it from the Humane Society standpoint, agricultural operations could also include puppy mills. And so we're kind of concerned about that. So it seems to cast a very broad net, and we're concerned about that in terms of a chilling effect of reporting violations.
Mm-hmm. And Carl, tell us about some of the, you know, animal cruelty cases we have seen in Utah over the years, and how your organization goes about, you know, dealing with this problem.
Well, I've got a ream right here. Mm-hmm. It would take us a long time to go through it. It goes from 1969 to almost 2010 of cases that John Fox, who's our cruelty investigator, has gone out. And these are the cases that he knows of, and these are the cases that have been reported to him that he's gone out. Now, he doesn't have police power anymore, so all he can do at this point in time is call the local authorities, which I think you'd agree, Randy, is probably the best thing people can do if they see something that's wrong.
Absolutely.
Call the local authorities, have them do that. Now, I don't know how much the local authorities can do if they don't have some documentation. And how do you get documentation? That's, the crux of the matter. This is radio, so it's a good thing that these pictures, that, you know, I've got lots of pictures here if anybody wants to go through those that are kind of examples down through the years of what's gone on and what John has encountered as he's gone out there. So they're out there. The cases are there. And again, I don't want to cast aspersions on the whole industry. Obviously, we eat food. I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't have a hamburger or a steak from time to time. I think what we're concerned about is, A, does it have a chilling effect on something that does concern public safety and also concerns the animals? And B, is this something, I don't know, maybe you can answer this for me, Randy. How many other industries have this type of legislative protection?
I don't know. I can't answer
And
that.
I can't answer that either. I don't know, Jeff. Maybe that's...
I don't know that there are a lot of industries that would, we've been told that by some organizations that they would like to see cameras running in animal operations 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something that's way beyond what any other industry in the country would be looking at today. Carl?
I guess why I bring it up, I saw a report this morning on the news, and it was about a daycare center, and the reporter went in there with a hidden camera, and they were trying to make the point of, do you know who's watching your kids at the daycare center? It could be somebody who has a criminal background, and should you be aware of that? The daycare center had not made the parents aware of the fact that some of the people working for them had criminal backgrounds. Now, does this set a precedent? I guess that's a question I would ask. Does it set a precedent for other industries that you can't do this type of investigative reporting to find out what's going on at those operations?
In those situations, And this, I guess, theoretically, can they go on as an undercover journalist and falsify an application, in one of these situations just as a gotcha. I think, you know, I have some concerns with lying on an application for whatever
reason. Oh, and I do too. And I think what we would suggest, Randy, is that, you know, hopefully the employer-employee arrangement, a contract or letter of agreement covers that type of thing, mm-hmm. so that there's something there. And it seems like there are laws and there are ways to handle this without enacting another law of this nature that covers that, so that if the farmer or if the rancher has this happen to him, there's civil remedies available to them.
Of course, trespass is one
of those. Sure, trespass is one of those.
And Randy, coming back to you, Carl made an interesting point. You know, what if I'm an employee of your operation? I'm not somebody who falsified an application. I'm there, you know, in good faith, employed by you. But I do see abuse, and I kind of want to be a whistleblower of sorts. Are there legitimate concerns that this bill would perhaps make that illegal?
I would hope that that if somebody has an opportunity to say, hey, there's some problems here, that they have the ability to go through a process and have that reported. The other side of that coin, Jeff, that concerns me just as much is the disgruntled employee that's mad at his employer that does something to the animals to try and get even with the employer. You know, just to draw attention, to get even, that kind of a thing, where we have some concerns for that. Now, you know, maybe stepping back just a little bit, animal agriculture is people sneaking on the operations, into the operations. We've seen some of that done here in Utah, not an awful lot of it, but to take film footage in various animal operations. There's a biosecurity issue there that maybe is different than in any other industry. If you introduce a bacteria, a virus, or something like that in some of these environments, it can create a huge problem, not only to the animals but to the product that comes to us for consumption. So, you know, the biosecurity issue, I think, needs to be part of this equation as well.
All right, gentlemen, we just have about a minute left here. But Randy, perhaps one final note here. Are there potential constitutional concerns, do you think, with this? Does it simply violate the right to free speech, even if you are on private property?
I don't think so, but I'm going to just jump somewhere real quick, Jeff. Constitutionally, I think we're protected, and that's why we said private property and so forth. But I'm thinking maybe we could work together here and use a market-oriented idea, where maybe through the Humane Society and the Department of Agriculture, we train people to look for those things, and there's a reporting process so that your concerns are covered, our concerns are covered, and maybe employees are trained within, you know, voluntarily employers send their people for this training, sensitivity training, but understanding ethical treatment of animals and all of that, and maybe we put a seal on that product when it goes to the market. Then the consumer, it's market-driven.
I think there's examples of it in the past. I think the rodeo industry, for example, worked with PETA, and while many in the rodeo industry do not like PETA, the checks and the balances there have certainly improved the treatement of the animals.
There's been benefits.
There have been benefits, and the animals are treated better than they were in the past.
All right, gentlemen, unfortunately we're out of time, but we appreciate this conversation. Very interesting topic. That's House Bill 187 up in the Utah legislature. And we've been speaking with Carl Arkey of the Utah Humane Society. Carl, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me in.
And also Randy Parker, CEO of the Utah Farm Bureau Federation. Thanks for joining us, too.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, you're listening to Politics Up Close here on KCBW. You're listening to Politics Up Close here on NPR Utah, KCPW. Under the Utah Indoor Clean Air Act, you can't smoke a cigarette in most public locations, but should you be able to use an electronic cigarette? Under a bill close to becoming law in the Utah legislature, you wouldn't be able to, and that has some Utahns saying the legislature is putting politics above science and good public policy. Joining me now on the phone this morning is one such advocate. That's Aaron Frazier of the Utah Vapors Association. Aaron, it's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jeff.
Aaron, tell me about why you use e-cigarettes and how they've benefited you personally.
I started using electronic cigarettes back in January of 2011 after many dozens of failed attempts at quitting through normal cessation attempts. Electronic cigarettes were never designed to be cessation, just as a kind of a switch and quit sort of method. And it worked for me. I didn't expect it to, but it did. And I've now been smoke-free for well over a year.
And so did you find that worked for you better than perhaps some of the other products out there, the Nicorette gums and that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I did try the gum. I tried the patches. I've tried the prescription medications. Every one of them failed for me on multiple times.
And so what exactly is an e-cigarette? How does it work?
Electronic cigarette is just a it's a battery device that heats up a special liquid that contains some optional nicotine if I want to have some nicotine in there, but it's a it's suspended in propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, and some food flavoring, basically, and it gives me the sensation of smoking without actually smoking.
Do you think there's a large community of people in Utah that use these products?
Absolutely, there is. I'm actually the founder of the Utah Vapors Association here in the state, and we founded the group basically on the principles of educating the public for switch and quit methods. And we actually get together on a regular basis in public restaurants and local establishments that actually welcome us, so we can get together and discuss legislation and vaping.
And so, Aaron, as I mentioned, there's this bill up at the Utah Legislature. It puts both e-cigarettes and hookah tobacco in as well under the authority of the Utah Indoor Clean Air Act. Why are you lobbying against this bill? Why do you think it's bad public policy?
We believe it's bad public policy. I mean, from a physics standpoint, vapor is not smoke. I mean, just chemically, scientifically, physically, it is not the same. So we believe Utah really has no business selectively trying to redefine physics to satisfy what they believe their political perception or morals are on the subject. We've done a lot of feedback all over the internet, and there's almost every Utahan that we've spoken to believe that this is a ridiculous bill that does nothing more than to force electronic cigarette consumers back to smoking, and it's just, you know, big government trying to push their weight around.
Have you had the opportunity to testify against the legislation in committee to try and you know, stop it from being implemented?
Yeah, we've had several members of our group, both vendors and consumers, that have testified at the committee. Unfortunately, they were not given more than just a couple of minutes to present their case, unlike the folks who have the hookah bars, who were given tremendous amounts of time and who also have a lot of lawyers that are representing them. You know, we are representing ourselves as public constituents.
And so, Aaron, I know a study a few years ago from Boston University found that e-cigarettes were, of course, much less harmful than regular cigarettes. You certainly don't have a lot of the same chemicals. But at the same time, the nicotine itself can cause cancer, can't it? Wouldn't that be an argument in favor of this bill?
If it were true, Jeff, yes, it would be. But unfortunately, nicotine has not ever been proven to cause cancer. Nicotine is a stimulant, very similar in effect from a physical standpoint to like caffeine. So when you look at it in that regard, it's not a whole lot different. It is an addictive product. I don't think anybody, including myself, would deny that. And we don't recommend anybody just pick one up that has never smoked before. But for those types of people who are smokers, who have been unable to quit through traditional methods that want to, this is an alternative that removes all of the 4,000-plus chemicals that are in tobacco smoke.
What about parents who might be concerned about, their children being exposed to this vapor in public locations? Couldn't you sympathize with them at all?
No, I absolutely would sympathize with them, and a lot of this comes down to public education, Jeff. There are a tremendous amount of studies that have been done on this that at this point the Utah legislature have ignored that show that the vapor itself is not harmful. Again, we've got a lot of studies. We've tried to share it with the government, and at this point they have been unwilling to review them.
And this has been a national issue, right? We're seeing a similar legislation in a lot of other states, I would imagine.
Exactly. This time of year, obviously, is a very busy year for the legislative sessions, and we've been fighting this similar bill in many states around the country. At this point, Utah is the only one who has progressed their bills this far. All the other states, I think, except for one, which is primarily a Democratic-run state, has actually canceled the bills.
We've been speaking with Aaron Frazier. He is the founder of the Utah Vapers Association, an organization of electronic cigarette users that's advocating against a bill to ban e-cigarettes in public under the Utah Indoor Clean Air Act. Aaron, we appreciate your time very much. Thank you for joining us on Politics Up Close.
Thank you for having me on, Jeff.
Politics Up Close is a production of KCBW News. Thanks to Jesse Ellis for his help with the program. Listen to it every Friday morning at 9 and Sunday morning at 6 on KCBW, and download full podcasts of our interviews online at kcbw.org. I'm Jeff Robinson. Thanks for joining us.